Hello and welcome to another episode of the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann. This show is about my recent experiences on a farm tour at Yeehaw Farm outside of Duncan in Pennsylvania. I went to Yeehaw as part of a farm tour and to hear Susan Godwin, Oxfam's Woman Food Hero for Nigeria, speak about her experiences, and the event was sponsored by Oxfam USA and the Women in Agriculture Network. I've divided that day into two sections, this first one discussing Yeehaw Farm and the tour, and the second, Susan's conversation with us. Yeehaw Farm is a multi-generational farm located in the valleys of Appalachia here in Pennsylvania that raises chickens, sheep, pigs, goats, and cattle, both dairy and beef, along with vegetables and other offerings that are sold through an on-site farm store and several varied CSA programs, including a whole diet option. All of this information and more was shared with everyone during the farm tour as we walked around the site and were given insight into the workings of the farm and the changes they've made over the last 5 years since moving from what we might call a conventional or modern farm to a more sustainable one. We began our walking tour with the dairy cows that were mob-grazed on a natural pasture. I say natural because the pasture is not being seeded or grown with anything in particular, but being left to grow what grows there, including what might otherwise be considered weeds. And Judy commented that she noticed the difference in the cows' eating habits and their milk production since moving to this kind of grazing, and also a change in the land, particularly that there's more bounce and spring that's returned to the soil, that it seems more healthy and less compacted than it had previously. We then moved over to where there were a mix of dairy and meat goats, clearing brush, and talked about how effective goats are at eating most any plants or woody material. And we were directed to an area where the goats were penned for the two previous days before the move that morning, and anything smaller than about my wrist was gone. While we were standing there talking for about 10 minutes or so about the goats and what they were raising and how they were cared for and managed, the goats cleared like a 50-square-foot space inside the currently fenced area, and in some cases they would be standing on their hind legs or even on each other to pull down the tops of shrubs and get at what they wanted. Judy said that they would move the goat pen every few days, but otherwise the goats would stay out in the fields, even going so far as to milking them where they were rather than bringing them in. We then headed over to look at the beef cattle, which are all the Hereford breed, and among the herd of cows was also the 18-year-old bull, who's very productive and doing well, and they were able to keep him as part of the herd because of generally how gentle the Hereford breed is. And like the dairy cattle, the beef were being mob-grazed, which allowed the farm to double the size of their herd compared to what they had been using with other methods. Here we also talked about what management practices were in place for rotational grazing, and whether or not they would allow chickens to move into the pastures after the cattle. But it was pointed out that in this area of the fields it wasn't an option, because the open skies and lack of cover, and birds of prey tended to do quite a number on chickens out in the open. But that didn't keep the farm from raising chickens in a free-range manner, but they do so away from the open fields, where the chickens have more places to run and hide from predators. And the chicken breed, which are raised for meat, is the Freedom Ranger, which is especially well-suited for being allowed to roam freely during the day, but will return to a coop at night. And there's a large mobile coop that they just move around as they wish to get the chickens to go about different sections of the farm. Wrapping up our tour, we walked around the man-made 3-acre pond, which Judy's father or grandfather, which at the moment I don't remember which, dug out and expanded over a series of years. Just one man, one bulldozer, one dump truck. And then moved from the pond to the peanut field to discuss with Susan Godwin, whose lecture I'll cover in the next episode, the techniques used in Nigeria for raising peanuts because they're one of Susan's primary crops. Being in a more northern area of the United States, peanuts don't always grow well here, though our growing season is just long enough for some peanut varieties. Too often we can have an extended or late spring showers that'll cause the peanuts to rot in the field or drown out young seedlings. This year, though, Yeehaw seemed to have a pretty good run with them. The last part of our tour, past the pig fields and through the barn, wrapped up a bit quickly so we could make it back and have lunch on time and then listen to Susan's experiences. And the pigs that are being raised here are, like the beef cattle, also called Hereford, and another heritage breed. And they're also rotationally grazed. And I heard mention of using the pigs to clean up other areas of the fields. I mention all this and walk through what I experienced at this farm, because as a permaculture practitioner, this tour presented one of the more educational experiences I've had so far, because I got to see what a large, on-the-ground, sustainable farming process can look like. The transition they made over the past several years, reconnecting with the earth, animals, and customers, led to a more productive and stable farm. And during the tour, one topic we kept cycling back to was that, with the exception of some dietary minerals and baking soda, all of the feed for the farm was raised on-site, and it was a basic mix for everything. They would grind up their grains and other materials that went into it, mix in the baking soda and other minerals, and all the animals on the farm got the same thing, and they all seemed healthy and to be doing well. There was no discussion of needing veterinarian visits or having to adjust what they were doing in any way to make it work. And though they were relying on fossil fuels and other methods that may not fit with some of the long-term permaculture paradigms, the work on the farm is a great transitional model, and getting to see something like this yourself can provide a lot of insight into leverage points that you can find to make permaculture work with farmers in your area. That's why I think it's important that if you have an opportunity to attend a farm tour of any kind, you should. During the conversation with others during the tour, because there were many other farmers there who came to see the operations, as well as what Judy talked about, there were quite a few tools and techniques that came up that I wouldn't have encountered otherwise, such as the mob grazing, which if you've listened to the interview with Seth Wilner, I talk with him about that in the beginning, and this is where I learned about that idea. But self-directed learning plays a role in opening ourselves to the issues faced on farms in general, or a particular farm that we may tour, and depending on the other guests, you can hear about other problems and solutions that they're finding. A farm tour begins to integrate the permaculture practitioner into agriculture. And if we're going to show how the system of design scales up and applies to the broad scale, farmers have a wealth of knowledge for us to turn to. Though their methods may include monocropping or other ideas that we would want to move away from, understanding how they irrigate or connect with markets or sell to wholesalers or directly to their customers have a place in taking a holistic look at how these systems currently function and how we can integrate permaculture practices that move towards a more self-sufficient, resilient farm. And as Seth said in the conversation, we need to be able to get the participation of the farmers. We need to get their buy-in. We can't just walk onto a farm, any farm, and set forth a way forward without knowing where the individual farmers come from, that we can provide kind of a holistic management plan or a whole farm plan that's based in permaculture principles for them to work with. One of the things from my personal experiences that come to mind is that I have a deep interest in riparian repair because of runoff issues in Pennsylvania and the impacts that pollution from the Susquehanna watershed has on the Chesapeake Bay. Asking a farmer to put in a fence to keep livestock away from on-property streams and then rebuilding an appropriate riparian buffer could mean taking valuable land out of production for them and reducing their earnings. Or perhaps by fencing that off and not having that area to graze or the regular access to water require them to reduce their herd. So instead, a solution to this issue needs to return a value to the farmer in order to have an appropriate interest based on their expectations. And that reflects the idea within permaculture that each solution and setting is unique. For someone raising pigs, we might discuss with the farmer about growing oaks on the outer edge of the buffer, so that the acorns could provide valuable fodder. For someone else, the buffer could be part of an alley cropping solution. Or, if they have a long-term pragmatic view of their farm, perhaps including timber trees that would have a slow growth but a long-term value to return to the farmer's family in the future. Or act as a value store that could be pointed to that if money becomes tight for some reason that they could turn to those timber trees that they have growing and then turn them into lumber that is a financial boon in a time of need. As we want to build a better world, we need to engage everyone possible in our community so we can work together to make it happen and not apart in a way that doesn't help all of us. And that will take us into the next episode with the talk by Susan Godwin speaking about her role as a Nigerian farmer. I'll talk to you again about that soon. Until then, consider telling a friend about the show, sharing a link on Facebook to your favorite episode, sending out a tweet about some material you found here, or stop by and make a donation. You can find out about all of that and more at thepermaculturepodcast.com/support. Take care of the earth, yourself, and each other.